SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Bally's Las Vegas, a very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, where you'll be able to enjoy coverage of the 22nd National Horse Players Championship. And we enjoyed yesterday, after we wrapped up and got off the air, the Last Chance First Chance, which had all of the accoutrement, all the elements of what we're going to enjoy here the next 72 hours until we crown a champion on the final table. Keith Shamblin, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, pull that microphone a little closer. There you go. Now you're talking. And you'll be more clearly heard by the radio audience.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you back. This is becoming a tradition.
Unbelievable. And, seventh year.
That's great. Great. And 22nd year here. And, of course, great. Bally's has done it once again. It's a fantastic venue. Great party last night, welcome cocktail party. We had a Q&A for the, over 100 rookies are here. So once again, a great turnout.
So almost 20% of the field.
Yes, and, they walked in, a lot of wide-eyed people walking into the room who were somewhat overwhelmed. But, that's what makes it such a great event. And, we've got professional horse players, and we've got everyday fans who, all have one thing in common, and that's that you can't buy your way in to the NHC. You have to earn a berth, and I think that's what makes it so unique and so great that everybody here, they're already winners just for getting here, and, they won a trip to four days in Las Vegas and airfare and hotel and right here on the strip, and this is the icing on the cake, and should be a great event. Really looking forward to it.
We're going to go through some of the final numbers and some of the last second elements, but before we do that, let's talk about yesterday for a second, and then in a little bit we'll get started on weekend preview brought to you by Twin Spires, because obviously there's a lot to preview. But yesterday you had one of those things that is very tough to do, even in a limited setting like the Last Chance, where there was only 11 plays, 4 mandatories, 7 electives, and Scott Cavalieri got out to a lead and improved his position, as Jay Privman says.
Looked like Nick's go.
maybe not tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, in 2021 anyway.
Exactly.
And just straight to the lead, and that really was on top of the leaderboard from the get-go and had a fantastic day. And, of course, just was right there on top all day. And I think he finished with about $180 and just terrific. And, of course, huge record entries in the event, the Last Chance, First Chance. It's really turned into an event of its own. And, the 527 entries. We had a full house, and it's a great way to test the systems and get underway. But 24 lucky entries, and then we had 3 individuals who were up on the leaderboard all day and qualified for next year's event already. So, Jay Jones finished 3rd overall, but he was already a double qualifier. Dylan Donnelly finished 4th overall, already a double qualifier. And Greg Kingma finished 5th, already a double qualifier. And all 3 of them are the first qualifiers into 2023. So you know, good for them. They're off to a great start. And I think Dylan Donnelly's got his eyes on that tour prize that he almost won a couple of years ago.
Got beat on the last, basically, the last, literally the last race.
Like Hall of Famer Sally Goodall.
Right.
So, you know, good to see him back up high on the leaderboard and already a qualifier for next year. And now he can focus on the, probably focus on the tour. I can't see him backing off. I can see him putting the pedal to the metal and really trying to accrue a lot of points this year.
The other successful players yesterday for Last Chance, and do we know how many of these got in, that this is their only ticket, or if some of these, and how many of these were second seats?
I have to get a copy of that and bring it over here, but yes, we'll get that for you.
Well, I know, for instance, Dan Brockman, whose wife was our At the Races representative that won the Beat Pick contest a couple of years ago. She couldn't come. They've moved to Arizona from California, but she didn't come. But Dan got himself, I know, a second ticket by and he actually, I was kind of watching his name. He worked his way up, and all of a sudden I saw him in the 40s. Then he was in the 30s, and he ended up about 15th overall. So congratulations to Dan. But the top names, Scott Cavalieri. What was the, and there was prize money to be had yesterday, too. It wasn't
there was
just 40, tickets.
Over $40,000 to the winner, and pretty good prize money. And, you know, we're going to look at the whole First Chance, Last Chance, which has become incredibly popular in a very short period of time. I think 2 years ago we had less than 200 entries. Yesterday we had over 527. So we're going to look this after this event at how we might revamp the entire event.
Make it like a six-figure kind of a contest.
Possibly, and also the look at the ratios of those that are competing to try to go to 2023 that have already double qualified but want to play in a contest here at Bally's the day before the NHC, and also the last chance contest to get in, which, you know, we add seats as we get more play, more entries into the contest, and that's how we gave away so many yesterday. But probably the fair thing to do would be to give away a like number for double qualifiers into next year if they're, you know, if they're putting up the money and they're playing in this kind of contest. So we'll look at all that. You know, we've had a lot of good suggestions, and always open to change, try to make it better. And obviously it's taken on a life of its own. And you know, we even had someone say you could do two contests. And, you know, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And
it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, for those that don't do very well in the morning, they'd be right back firing in the afternoon if they had another opportunity. So we'll look at everything.
A couple of other notes. There were some tragic beats late, and that included the one and only John Herd, Hurricane, who is going to haunt him. He's going to stay, though, and support the champ, Mike Bacik. In fact, these signs all over the Who Dat team, reserved security for the champ. But John, this was brutal. He went to Jesuit in New Orleans, the Blue Jays, and he was going to play Blue Jay in that nightcap at Fairgrounds, got off of it, went to the favorite, just was trying to secure even show money to hang on for the bottom rung in the 20s. Blue Jay finished second, and that would and he was absolutely just inconsolable, which I can understand. And so there was plenty of that. But Scott Cavalieri, Bob Bertolucci, Jim Murphy, Eric Archer, Scott D. Fitzgerald, not to be confused with Scott F. Carl Broberg, whose presence always seems to be a lightning rod for some controversy and consternation. John Vogel, John Fisher, George DeKeyanan, David Shenvert joins his brothers and his father, So Team Shenvert, very prominent here. Chris Gruch, Chris All, Charlie Witt, Dylan McIntosh, Todd Farrow, Dan Brockman is mentioned, Pat Connell, Dave Nichols, Kevin Smith, Kenny Jordan. I'm going to guess that's a second seat for Kenny.
Probably, yeah.
From the Jersey Mafia, Mark Richards, Stephen Lerma, Malcolm Esker, and Devanthan Marugasan. There's your two dozen yesterday from Last Chance, First Chance. Turning to the agenda for today, let's remind everybody, in our coverage, of course, this afternoon, we'll probably give you about... probably give you 4 hours today, and I am just reaching for the timing. It's going to be a little different, and you could talk about this. I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk to Eric Wing about the race selection. But today, the first mandatory is at 10:58 Pacific time, so that comes at Oaklawn. Our schedule looks like here is probably 12:30 to 4:30 local time, so 3:30 to 7:30 Eastern, and actually the last race at Santa Anita, I think, is the last race today for contest purposes, goes off at, I believe, 8:07. So there's a chance, even though I said, you know, we'd go to 7:30, chances are we might wait until the last race. But we're going to start at 3:30 Eastern today. And if anything changes on that, I'll get it out on Twitter. But heavy up on the Santa Anita selections today. Explain to everybody, Keith, the format and what happens today and then into tomorrow and into Sunday.
Well, today and Saturday, 18 races, 10 optional plays, 8 mandatory plays from 8 different tracks. And we'll begin about 9 a.m. with the... 9:10 is the first race from Laurel. As soon as I get off the radio, I'm going to call and make some inquiries about weather and get an update. We know we're off the turf at Tampa today.
Right, that was established yesterday.
So they've already announced that, so that's good information for horse players who are looking at the Tampa card. And I know a lot wore and a lot were disappointed when they heard that news. We've got our eye on Aqueduct, obviously. They've got a store... So it looks like what might be a pretty sizable.
They're talking
snowstorm.
10 to 12 now. I mean, it looks hopeless for Aqueduct tomorrow.
Yeah, so I wouldn't spend a lot of time on the Aqueduct card if I'm a horse player handicapping 8 different tracks. We'll be watching Laurel to see if, you know, they felt fairly confident yesterday that they were going to be able to skirt the snow or a lot of the snow and might be okay, but you never know with a northeaster. You just don't know where it's
whether it's gonna, bomb cyclone.
Yes. So anyway, but that went into a lot of the thinking about the mandatories for both today and Saturday. And we have a committee of 4 that makes those selections, and it's a talk about a thankless job. But it also led to some early handicapping and discussion that I've been having for several months, actually, about Sunday's final table. And we've added Sam Houston as a potential eligible track. And I think you're going to see 2 to 3 races from Sam Houston on Sunday. It's a great card. It's Houston Festival. And at least 2 great graded stakes on that card.
Yep.
So we're going to look at those and several other major, you know, wide open stakes races. And, you know, we've alerted everyone, and we've announced it, and we've told them it only will end up affecting 10 people who make it to the final table. But we believe that better to have value and a wide open race than, you know, possibly a 5 or 6 horse field. And, you know, we've had those short fields in the past. So why not try to put together the best final table card that we possibly can? That's what we're going to do for Sunday. So, you know, obviously the weather is impacting a lot of the decision-making into Saturday. But beyond that, I think we'll be in pretty good shape for Sunday now that we're seriously considering Sam Houston. I haven't gotten those races yet, but they'll pick those today.
And we'll get those to everybody when that transpires. And one of the parts of that is going to be certainly nice, as mentioned yesterday, the fact that Nick Tamaro, who normally would be in this room competing, although he'll be the first to tell you that he's always a long shot in NHC. He's much more a likely candidate for BCPC, but a chance for Nick to acknowledge everybody with his father being laid to rest today. So just a nice development, and I can tell you one person that it may elevate their focus, and that's Trey Stiles.
Yeah.
who if he manages to work his way to that group of 10, he'll have a considerable, although the stakes, it isn't as if, although you're considering the whole card, so it isn't as if, you know, the Connolly and or the Ladies Classic have to be on it, but you know, certainly his familiarity with the track would go a long way, no doubt. Well, Keith, other than that, some other news and notes that interesting in terms of participants. And, you know, I asked you last night or yesterday when we talked about, you know, some of the portions of things like, you know, the returning champs, looking for a repeat winner, which we've never had. It's come a little close, of course, with Jose Arias and Ray Arsenault, certainly. But some other news
maybe
and notes.
This will be the year. You never know. We've got a lot of familiar faces. I think we've got nine returning champions that are participating.
Nice.
And trying to find my list here of all nine of them. I don't want to leave anybody out if I start naming them. But got tour champion Kevin Costello playing for a $5 million bonus after winning the tour this year. You know, he won last year's first chance, last chance contest, and went wire to wire in the tour, and that might have been one of the reasons that we had such a high turnout last week. He got a ton of tour points for winning last year's last chance contest, and just never looked back. So we have to credit him for part of the record field yesterday. We've got Justin Mastari back to defend his crown.
That's right.
From last August, so that'll be a lot of fun. He was the youngest champion in the history of the event at 26 years old, so great to have him back. We've got Thomas Goldsmith, our 2020 winner. We've got Scott Coles, our 2019 winner. Chris Littlemore, our 2018 winners, back in the field. Ray Arsenault, Hall of Famer. Won it in 2017. Jose Arias, a future Hall of Famer for sure, and a controversy last year around his final table play when he missed a race or skipped a race. So he's back and ready to go again. We already mentioned Michael Baychok, our 2012 champ and the all-time leading money earner. Stanley Bavlish, who won it in 2007, and Mr. Consistency, is back. Steve Wolfson Jr. won it in 2003. And then, of course, the Grand Dame, Judy Wagner, who won it in 2001 and is back once again at the NHC.
She's amazing.
It'll be interesting to watch their names on the leaderboard throughout the week.
Excellent, and some of the fun stories, some of the characters, and interesting career.
We'll be bringing all that to you as well.
Excellent,
so stay tuned, and of course, you know, we mentioned the 105 rookies. We'll get those. Another track announcer in the field. Talked to him last night. Dale Day from Remington Park.
Drove to Vegas from Oklahoma City.
Drove to Vegas. We've got a great story. Dale Day and I stayed in Las Vegas, shared a room in 1994 with a bunch of buddies. We were both working at Remington Park, and we had cigars, booze, and racing forms were our luggage. And we're in the old Barbary Coast, which is now the Cromwell.
Wow.
And we came into the room, and there was an individual. We were wondering what was happening to all our cigars and liquor. And somebody, it seemed like somebody was drinking it. And we walked into the room one night, and there was a person in our room. Said it was his room. We said, no, this is our room. And he took off out the room. Turns out, we called security. Turns out they caught him. He had a whole huge ring of like 150 hotel room keys. These were back in the old days when you didn't have the magnetic cards. You used a key to get into the room, and he had one for every hotel on the strip, probably five for every hotel, and was just living in other people's rooms.
That's tremendous.
Unbelievable story.
That's fabulous.
Only in Vegas.
That is great. That's like Helen Hayes in Airport, the stowaway.
It was incredible.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
Yeah, so we'll have to get Dale on with you, too. It's his first time here. He was a little overwhelmed last night when he walked into the room.
Oh, that's funny.
He's ready to go.
I love it. And of course, we mentioned Dave Weaver from TVG is here.
One of the best. You know, he's really good at these contests, and maybe this is his year.
Well, just as always, a lineup that is star-studded, and then there's some stars that will emerge as well that will make their presence known, as it were.
Well, we got a lot of money up for grabs. We got, $3.6 million in prizes and awards in total. We've got, over $2 million in cash that we're giving away. $2.339 million in cash will be distributed over the next couple of days. We've got 134 double qualifiers, 509 individuals, over 643 entries in the tournament. So great turnout. Really appreciative of folks sticking with us throughout the year. Tournament play, contest play, participation in the tour has never been stronger, and it's a real credit to the customers out there and horse players, but also to our track partners who put on these events year-round. And really, after COVID, when they started to reopen, we discounted some of the pricing for the NHC seats in order to allow them to get back on their feet after, nearly a year of not having patrons in their crowd. And everybody wanted to try to figure out, ways to get people back to the track, and hosting contests was one way to do it, and a way to drive on track handle and attendance. And we worked with them, and just had a terrific year, and happy to do it. And hopefully we've introduced some new tracks to contests, and I think we'll see more and more participating in contests, even if they're not NHC contests. We always just encourage them to just host a contest do it, just not a high-end, high-dollar contest, but all types of contests. You should have Monmouth Park. They're the very best, and the poster child. They host contests for every type of player, it's really a main part of their marketing menu at Monmouth. And I could see more tracks gravitating to that because it's so tied to our core product.
Well, and those that were listening to the replay, you heard at the end of the show the last 15 minutes spent with Brian Skirka, and anybody that that has any inkling, this isn't limited to the racetracks. It's not even limited to OTB type organizations, but really anybody that has any kind of reach and any kind of a base of racing interested parties. I mean,
absolutely.
That's something that should be extended. It doesn't. Virtually anybody, and it's not expensive. In the scheme of things, as a marketing tool, it's a value.
No question about it, and it's a real pure play to horse players. that this isn't like buying ads in the local newspaper to promote a T-shirt giveaway. This, you know, you're really going after core customers and people who want to learn more about how to handicapping, and it's just great because it's tied to our core product, which is selling pari-mutuel tickets.
Keith Shamblin, we will check in, of course, over the next 3 days on a regular basis as we inch closer to kickoff.
All right, Steve, glad to have you, and look forward to visiting with you throughout the weekend.
Keith Shamblin, everybody, and the team at NTRA that is set to go, and certainly a smooth day one when it came to last chance, first chance, and getting all the dots to connected, all the T's and I's crossed and dotted. We're going to start weekend preview brought to you by Twin Spires. And Scott Shapiro is standing by. Shap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's Vegas treating you so far?
No complaints. It's always a pleasure, and we're ready. We're excited. Everybody's geared up. Really did feel yesterday like there was a pent-up energy. You know, some of the players that didn't come last August, you know, so that they haven't technically been here literally in two calendar years. Roger Cetina expressing that yesterday. And, you know, one of the all-time greats in this contest. Sure. So, yesterday everybody was, and I suppose maybe that's one of the reasons there was such a an interest and a strong showing for the last chance, first chance, so that, you know, people maybe took the edge off a little bit, you know, from the get the yayas out.
No doubt about it. Yeah, I used to get to come out there a couple years, never played in it, but got to enjoy it and do a little work, and definitely miss being out in Vegas in general. Haven't been in a while, and certainly miss being out there for the big tournament.
Well, we've got plenty of action to keep us busy, and Scott, between the two championship games on Sunday, which we'll talk about. In fact, I availed myself of the they've got the sportsbook people right over to our right, and so they've got all the sheets out. So I've got props, I've got first half, second half, I've got player props, and you name it to consider for Sunday. But let's dive into, you know, the racing first, and you know, you've been watching Oaklawn and playing Oaklawn, and it is a good stakes card. We'll talk to Hammer next hour, but between that and Gulfstream, I imagine you got some ideas.
Yeah, I've spent almost all the time on Oaklawn. Got to dive into Gulfstream a little bit, but I'm sure you'll have some sharper, more knowledgeable opinions at this point for their card on Saturday. But I love the card tomorrow. It's probably, hopefully not, you know, words I regret saying. And I know I've been a little cold on Saturdays. I apologize to the audience. I know you came through with the $60 winner for John Ortiz a couple weeks back to make up for it. But I think this card tomorrow is, like you said, a very, very good card, not only in terms of quality runners, but just some good wagering opportunities.
Well, and of course, there's some, you know, three-year-old import, obviously, when it comes to the Southwest. Then the King Cotton has got some nice, interested sprint types. He mentioned John Ortiz. Hollis will come back after that, you know, stunner in December. Where do you want to start?
You want to start with the Southwest and go from there?
Sure.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I thought the Southwest, I don't know if we're going to see anyone in here, you know, hit the board in the Kentucky Derby or any of the Triple Crown races, but I thought it came up very fun and very competitive in terms of gambling. I mean, New Grange, obviously going to get a lot of respect off the undefeated record, 2-1 on the line for Bob Baffert. Won't be eligible for the Derby points, but definitely eligible to cash tickets if he wins, and you know, I think he's worth taking a chance in here. Obviously, Baffert, a lot of success in Arkansas. Hasn't won this race, though, since 2013 with Super 99. More success in the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby recently. Tough horse to get a real good read on, but I just don't think he's a standout enough in the bunch. You know, he made the easy lead last time in the Sham with stablemate Rockefeller letting him have it easy his way. Not going to happen in here. I mean, maybe he can relax just off the pace, but if he wants the lead, he's going to have to earn it. I ended up landing on Ben Diesel. It's somewhat of a lukewarm top pick, Steve. I saw this horse debut at Churchill Downs on that first Stars of Tomorrow card on Halloween, and he was able to relax from an, you know, relatively inside draw, and thought he was very impressive that day in a pretty solid group. And then in each of the last two starts against Stakes Company, he's been marooned on the far outside, which forced this horse under John Court to be aggressive from the gate to avoid getting caught too wide and in a tricky spot, and I think it's compromised his chances. But now he moves inside, and I don't think he's a need-to-lead type, and I'm definitely hoping in terms of gambling he's not, because that might be an issue with plenty of speed types to his outside. But if he can kind of relax in that pocket, which I think he should be able to do, I think if he's anywhere near 10-1, he's a pretty attractive wager. Dash Attack, 2-for-2, very impressive in both starts. They have come over an off-going in both of them, one of them good, one of them last time out, and Smarty Jones was over the slot, but hard to knock anything he's done. And then I thought Vivar on the far outside is a horse that seems to be progressing nicely for Brad Cox and Shoreleaf Stables. Gets the blinkers on, which you know, hopefully will benefit. We'll need to avoid a wide voyage under Florent Giroux, but I thought at 12-1 he was a tad interesting as well.
I agree that it may be worth being against Newgrange in here, and I'm anxious for Osborne's 3-year-old debut.
Yeah, I mean he's done nothing wrong really. I thought the last effort in the Springboard Mile, you could say he was, you know, I'd definitely argue he was best, and you know the two turns is somewhat of a question mark whether he's going to be best going two turns, but a ton of talent there for sure.
All right.
And you mentioned the King Cotton, which maybe not the best betting race on the card, but a very intriguing race. Hollis was the horse you mentioned. What an eye-popping effort that was, you know, last time out. Big numbers in terms of whatever metric you look at, a 102 on our BrisNet speed ratings, and a horse that just loves Oaklawn Park, burying Nashville. Last time, now did have the outside stalking trip while Nashville was drawn on the inside in that spot off the long layoff. Now the roles are reversed with Hollis along the inside and Nashville to the outside. In terms of a wagering opportunity, I mean, they're probably the two horses to beat without question, but we talked about Seven Nation Army when we spoke in mid-January. He's coming back pretty quick, but you made a real good point that oftentimes Moquette runners, you know, going to take a step forward in that second start off the layoff, not that first one. But he ran well in that race. It was a favorable race shape for the 7-year-old gelding, but finished a pretty good second that day. And now moves to the outside. He broke sharp off the bench that day, but I think he's a horse that normally can relax and should get a real good trip over a racetrack he's run well over. And he ran second in this race last year to Boulder, who's also in here. That was over a sloppy going. Boulder, a horse that, you know, relishes the off going. But I think Seven Nation Army at 8-1 is interesting. Maybe tying up with Hollis in Nashville, or you know, just a win wager. You definitely using in the horizontal wagers.
Very good.
And a couple things towards the beginning of the card that I thought were worth a look. Race 2. Is a $20,000 open claimer. Riverboat Gambler, to me, first start off the claim for Mike Maker, is a horse I'm interested in. The last two tries, I thought it's had excuses, especially last time out on New Year's Eve. Got out of the gate slow from the inside. That was against $30,000 open claimers. Was kind of in an uncomfy spot most of the way. And this is a horse that seems like he has to be ridden pretty hard. A lot of times when you watch his races, it looks like he's under a drive and maybe going the wrong way, and then he kind of re-rallies. And it's just what he did in this spot, and really, really finished well and galloped out very well that day, and now gets a, you know, nice drop in class. I think 4-1 on the line, pretty fair in the second leg of the early pick 5, first leg of the early pick 4. And let's see what we got here. The Martha Washington's the fourth race. Kentucky Oaks points on the line. I landed on Secret Oath in there, Steve. I'm not crazy about the price, but it's a 6-horse field. You're going to get plenty of support for the Brad Cox runner, the half the Caddo River Como Square, as well as Optionality, who exits the big stakes win at Remington to end the two-year-old campaign, but neither of those horses, at least originally, were managed like they were top horses for the Coxer Asmussen barn. Maybe they've exceeded expectations, but man, Secret Oath was good last time. Didn't get a perfect trip. Got a nice race shape, but got kind of stuck behind horses and had to wait and just absolutely pulled away for the coach and Luis Contreras in that spot. Regression, you know, a little bit of a concern with such a big move forward, but I think this horse has some talent, and if she can run back to that race, I think she's going to beat this group for the 200 lion's share of the 200,000.
I thought she was, in fact, one of several Lucas runners that had some appeal tomorrow.
Yeah, he seems to have a pretty strong group there with him in in Arkansas. You know, I definitely have landed on his runners before, and seems like he's got some high quality runners without question. But yeah, just from start to finish, there's a lot of good opportunities and high quality racing on this card.
Excellent. Well, anything for today before we talk football?
I thought today in the third, it's a low-level race. It's a beaten $10,000 claimer. But I thought number three, Tapalong, at 6-1 on the line was a little bit interesting. Second start of the form cycle for owner-trainer Steve Manley, who only one win at the meet so far, but clicking it well over 30% over his last 90 days with close to 60 starters. And this horse battled early against open 10 claimers off the bench last time, put away other speed to 23-1 and held on for third. And doesn't look like a lot of speed in here, so I think Tapalong anywhere near that 6-1 is a little bit intriguing. And let's see, I think I have one more I wanted to mention here. Sorry about that. Well, the eighth race is a good one, Steve. It's basically a stakes race, you know, one of those massive purses, $102,000, and Warriors Charge and Shared Sense are likely to take a lot of the money, and deservingly so. Warriors Charge coming off a fourth-place effort in the Tinsel. But, you know, if you're looking for a price in there, whether it be for contest or wagering, whatever, I thought Trident Hit sets up pretty well here. Second start off the bench for Ron Moquette. Hit the board in all three at Oaklawn. Comes off a third-place effort. Again, similar here, and I think there's some speed in here. So at 12-1, I thought Trident Hit maybe worth tying up in the exotics and maybe a small win wager.
I've been a fan of that horse from early on, so no argument from me. All right, so a couple of ideas for Friday at Oaklawn from Scott, and Tapalong the 3 in the third, and Trident Hit the 7 in the eighth. Very good. All right. There's your action on the ovals. How about on the gridiron? What are we doing on Sunday, Scott?
Man, I think I'm still recovering from that weekend of divisional round games. That was unbelievable. But just from start to finish and ended with one of the more entertaining games you'll ever see with the Chiefs and Bills. And hopefully we can come close to living back up to the entertainment we got last weekend. You know, I've been on the NFC. I've been on the Niners from, late in the regular season. I think, you know, this in general sets up for them. You know, you hear a lot of chatter if you're following or trying to research the games about how Kyle Shanahan owns Sean McVay and won 6 in a row. They beat him, you know, came from behind in the 17-0 win to week 18 to get in the playoffs. And there's a lot to that. You know, they just match up well against them with their offense. And Rams not great across the middle of the field on defense. That's where Jimmy G does his best work, you know, with those crossers and throwing across the middle of the field to George Kittle and Debo Samuel and them. The only problem is that Trent Williams, the best left tackle in football, is he'll probably play, but he's got an ankle injury and he's nowhere near 100%. Without him, they're just a little bit of a different offense. So I'm going to stick with the Niners to an extent, not overly bullish. The wager I've made on the game is the under, 46.5, depending on where you're at and when you get in. But I think both defenses are playing really well right now. These teams know each other extremely well. Third time facing each other this year, of course, since they're in the same division. So I think this game is in the low 40s, high 30s. So I like the under more, and I like the Niners some getting the points. And then in the AFC, going to be hard to beat the Chiefs. Their offense kind of had that struggling point during the middle of the season where they were figuring out how to beat the two high safety looks. But they've really figured things out. They just keep scoring. And I know the Bengals beat them at home in the game in Week 17. And I think the Bengals are going to score plenty of points. Joe Burrow continues to impress. I'm going to take the points reluctantly here. I do think with the amount of points that I expect to be in this game that it could be highly competitive and the Chiefs could easily win the game by 10, 14, 17 points. But I just can't. I just feel like the Bengals will be able to score enough to stay in it. But I like the over in the game, 54.5. It's a lot of points for an NFL game. But unless the Bengals really get conservative and try to run the ball to keep Mahomes off the field, which I don't think will be a winning recipe for them. I think with Burrow, they got to take a chance and hope they can win a shootout. I just don't see any other way this game doesn't have a lot of points in it. The Bengals defense is not going to match up well against the Chiefs, and I think the Bengals offense has the playmakers to score. So we'll go over 54.5 and then a little lukewarm Bengals plus 7.
I've been trying to find an angle, Scott, on some of the prop ideas, and one of the things that sort of caught my eye, and you just touched on it. There's some garbage time potential here, where if you're depending on who you're siding with, that you get these odds on margin of victory, and there's a couple of things that might be pretty appealing, and particularly if you think the Bengals could end up outscoring them, and things like how about Cincinnati by 13 to 18 points, 20 to 1.
Gotta be big, right?
20 to 1.
Yeah.
9 to 1 Cincy by 7 to 12. Then there's the player props that are intriguing me, and I would take a hard look at everything involving Ja'Marr Chase, who I just have been blown away by.
He's incredible,
unbelievable. Between him and Cooper Kupp are just stunning to me. But everything involving Ja'Marr Chase, he's 15 to 2 to score the first TD in the game, for instance. So there's these are kind of fun. Receiving yards, the over under is 88.5 on Chase, and that, I mean, hell, he could do that on two completions, three completions.
He's electric. It'll be interesting to see, because in that Week 17 game, Chase put up, I think, the 11th most receiving yards in NFL history that game, if I remember. But it was the game where the Bengals fell way behind, and then they came back and ended up winning. I kind of referenced it a minute ago. It'll be interesting because the way the Chiefs play defense that day and most days, he's going to get a lot of one-on-one looks, which Burrow and him are on the same page, to say the least. And he'll just throw those up for him, in a good spot, and let him go get him, because he knows in the end, that's plus EV move. The question is, will the Chiefs decide to bring more coverage over to Chase's side, and will that open up a lot for T. Higgins, who would be a number one receiver on about 20 NFL rosters in his own right? So I could see it going both ways, but it's hard to envision Chase not making a few big plays at the very least.
Well, we hope your plays are big this weekend, certainly, Scott, and we'll check in next week. And wish you best of luck. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you too. Have a great time out there. Should be a blast with all the NFL games and all the great racing and, of course, the tournament. So good luck to everybody out there, and have a great time, Steve.
Scott Chapp, everybody. Scott Chapp, 34, on your Twitter, courtesy of BrizNet and Twin Spires. And Ron Anderson is standing by. And it occurred to me this morning, as I was trying to envision that first turn and exactly how Joel Rosario and Arad Ortiz are going to spar setting up shop in the Pegasus, in the feature. And I said, you know what? Ron Anderson, probably a good guy to get a perspective. Ron, good morning.
Good Good morning, Mr. Beck. How are you?
Excellent. And looking forward to, not just what's on tap at Gulfstream tomorrow, but really some good action other than the snow issue in the Northeast. It should be a good day of racing. I'm just very curious. I know this is a random and putting you on the spot a little bit, but what do you expect to happen when the gates open?
Well, Steve, I just, everybody kind of knows this, I think. These are two of the better horses that we've seen in a while with basically the same style. So I just, I'm excited for the race, for everybody, not only myself and Joelle, but this is going to be some matchup. I honestly believe because of the draw, my horse is going to be in front of him. I've tried to explain to people, there's fast and there's fast and quick. And my horse, I believe, is a quick horse. He's very, very nimble on his feet. He gets in gear very quickly. And I got to think I'm going to be in front of him on the first turn, pending the gate. But as far as a matchup of two really, really good horses, I mean, I'm going to go back quite a few years to even try and guess at another matchup that could be as intriguing as this might be. I'm very much looking forward to it, like most everybody else, I'm sure.
Do you envision, basically... Irad, whose tendency is to not—I don't want to say take everything back, but he certainly is thought of as somebody that is more a pace presser or stalk and go type or an off the pace type. Do you sense that? And he's very quick out of the gate, obviously, to the tune of sub 45. I mean, Nick Sko hasn't gone sub 45 since early, last year. It doesn't make sense that the two of them just absolutely throttle and engage each other, immediately and distance themselves from everybody on the backstretch. Or is it just a question of making sure that both of them don't have, anybody in front of them? I mean, if life is good on the backstretch, has got open space, he can relax, and there's no reason Nick's Go couldn't relax under that scenario. And basically, as they make their way down the backstretch, then they start to, really engage each other.
I kind of understand what you're trying to say, but I don't know that there's going to be any relaxing the first maybe half a mile with these two horses. And the other thing I can tell you, and I know I've been quoted saying this a couple different times, look, this horse of mine is a really, really fast horse, but the one thing that's even more impressive maybe than it being fast, Steve, this horse runs around a turn like I don't remember maybe a horse, maybe ever. This horse runs around the turn as fast as he runs in the straight, I believe. He just seems to accelerate around the turn. So going to the first turn, that's an advantage. Being on the inside is an advantage. Going to the far turn, horses have tried to make up ground on him down the backside, trying to get in range at the 3/8 pole and going around the turn. And it just seems like, okay, they get in some sort of, range, a jock gets in range, and then this horse just takes off again. He's just a unique animal, and I have all the most respect for Life is Good. I think he's a super horse, but at this point, I wouldn't trade places with him. And I've seen people say, well, the other horse is going to be good. That horse is fast, and he was fast in the summertime, but, since then, they've tried to make him relax some so he could run further, and there's a lot of things that's water under the bridge, Saratoga, when he went head up with Steve Asmussen's horse that I rode. So I think that's a long time ago, and I think there's been some changes in his training and what they tried to do with him since then.
You know, one of the themes of this event that is kind of unusual is how it has, on a pretty regular basis, brought together two talents that, you know, one riding off into the sunset for one last go versus one that is in an ascendancy, and that certainly that profile fits here. And typically, it's been the ascendant horse that has succeeded in this event.
More often than not, I would like Todd's horse if I wasn't involved. That's just me. It's the last race of Nixco's career. I would like, but I'm pretty close to the other situation. And Steve, as you know, I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of good horses. I mean, a lot of good horses. 38 Breeders' Cups. You multiply that. How many horses are around? I was around in that realm. Triple Crown races, 15. I've been around the best horse trainers, and lucky enough, this horse is just different. So, 8 out of 10 times, I'd probably pick Todd's horse. I'm just telling everybody that wants to listen, I might have egg on my face at the end of the race. I'm just telling you, this is a different animal.
It certainly is intriguing, and you know, it's funny. Plenty of people, when we got done with Breeders' Cup, there had been no shortage of people that scoffed that this matchup would come to pass, and here it is, 24 hours out. Nixco from the rail with Joel Rosario for the Korean Racing team, and life is good. Irad Ortiz and Todd, and it really should be a heavyweight battle. You know, one of the funny things being here at Vegas for the NHC, Ron, you know, it things will build up, you know, through the day at Gulfstream, and in fact, the Pegasus Turf is one of the mandatory races. Everybody will be intrigued to watch that race, and then they're going to pass the wire, and everybody's going to turn and worry about, you know, their next play in the contest, and it'll be forgotten pretty quick around here.
Such is life. Everyone has right? their own agenda, and I'm sure that will be their agenda as one stride past the wire.
Exactly. They'll be turning to the, you know, the ninth at Fairgrounds and you know, there's something at Oaklawn and Golden Gate. Ron, you know, Joel back now, and we're a few weeks into the return off the injury. Quick overview. He's got a very interesting 3 days. Oaklawn today, Gulfstream tomorrow, and then to Houston for the Ladies Classic Connolly card.
Yes, we ended up on a bunch of live horses on Sunday. Chances today at Oaklawn, more than a couple chances possibly tomorrow at Gulfstream. So, you know, we're every day working for Joel and working for Johnny, of which Johnny's got crazy good chances at Hot Springs tomorrow on Southwest Day. It's all good. Life's good, as Mr. Clement always says. And we're excited for what's going to happen.
A couple of individual spots in the 2 mile-and-a-half races tomorrow. In fact, Clement with Beautiful Lover in the Le Previant, and on Media Blitz for Maker in the McKnight. Maker only entered 6 in the McKnight.
He had told me he was entered 4, so I guess the over-under was over.
2 AEs.
Yeah, you know what? These are a bit of a grab bag. Both of these races obviously have 2 very good chances. These races are... This is a card that we yearn for anymore for everybody. Full fields, competitive. You know, it's just going to be an exciting day.
You've got just one time for Brad Cox in the Inside Information, who's actually an interesting filly in there. Recently added to the Cox barn.
She's definitely okay, Steve.
And you're on Alms for Mike. That was a very quiet, glowing endorsement. Alms for Mike Stinnem in the new Pegasus Philly and Mare Turf Invitational. And one glance at that race, honestly, Ron, it felt like almost like Mike Lakehow wrote that for Regal Glory.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that. She's it's like I say to people, it's probably her race to lose. She's more than a little difficult in that race, I would say.
Channel Cat. You know, it's funny. You look at that Pegasus Turf, and there's a so often, Ron, we look at these races and you can't find speed, and then in this race there's a number of horses that are interested in the front end.
You know what, he takes blinkers off. You know, Johnny's been riding him at a further distance, so I see two or three or four of them kind of running away from him in here. He's definitely comes out of the right races. And he'll be, I think, in the second tier in the shortening of distance and the blinkers coming off. So I expect this horse to run well. I think he's trained well. One of my lines is I think he's sneaky okay. He's a horse that could be considered, I believe.
A jump over for a second. I'm not going to get much of a chance today. I did have Nick Tamaro yesterday, and we touched on the Sunday action, and you've got a mount in every stake, but in the Ladies Classic, Pauline's Pearl for Steve Asmussen, and in the Connolly Turf Cup, Mike Maker, A Journey to Freedom.
Steve, I think we're in, what, five or six stakes?
Yeah, six stakes.
I didn't do the work yet with all this, the hype for tomorrow and all, but I believe that we've got we're in a good spot in every race with a place chancing, and I think in the big race I do like Steve's Philly. I'm not telling anybody anything. She's 6-5 in the program, so
right.
But I still I'm looking for her to be very tough to beat.
And actually riding five for Asmussen on the day out of the six stakes, and also picked up an allowance try on Casey's Memory for Austin Gustafson early in the card. So a busy 3 days for Joel Rosario. And where are you going to be watching all this action? Are you stationed?
You know, Steve, we live on the beach in Hollywood, Florida, so I'll be at the track. In fact, I was just there this morning and just getting back to my apartment right now.
Nice.
So we're 8 minutes from the track, and at this point we are very excited about what's the pace to take place.
Well, Ron, best of luck to you and Joel and everybody. Johnny over to ride Newgrange and more at Oaklawn as well, and it's going to be intriguing. Everybody looking forward to a heavyweight showdown, and we don't get enough of these, so ours to enjoy.
It feels like Ollie Fraser to me.
There it is.
Probably a long time ago for some of the listeners, but you and I can both identify with that statement.
No doubt. Ron Anderson, everybody. One of the all-time greats, book and mounts, and with insight and understanding about how races will unfold, and it should be very, very entertaining. We're going to take the top of the hour break here, and when we come back, Jay Pridman is going to join us. A lot of three-year-old action to discuss with Jay. We'll get some recap from the LeCompte and his thoughts from that group in NOLA last week. And then start to dig in. The San Vicente, of course, right in the backyard, more or less, for Jay. Saturday. And the Southwest as well. Jay Pridman, DRF, next. Hour two, we're live at Vegas. The room starting to get some bodies filling in seats as everybody starts to get ready. A couple of hours away from the opening salvos. NHC 22. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.